Hello, it's Jabron Maciel here with another episode of Sacktown Talks. I'm here with veteran lobbyist John Lovell. Did I hear you say 37 years as a lobbyist in California?
No, this is my 36th year.
This is your 36th
starting year. Up, yeah.
Okay, very, very good. Yeah. What type of issues do you work on?
Primarily law enforcement issues, and I've represented an array of different law enforcement clients.
Okay.
I've also worked on animal protection issues and helped pass a ballot measure that protected horses from being slaughtered.
Like racetrack horses?
No, we had a ballot measure, Proposition 6, back in 1998, that outlawed the slaughter of horses for food for human consumption. There's a big horse meat market, primarily in Belgium and France and Japan. But a lot of the horses that were slaughtered are from the United States, and we outlawed that practice for any California horses.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Who was your client there?
My client was a group called Political Animals, who are active for different animal issues.
Oh, very cool. You must work with Jennifer Fearing a lot.
Not really.
Not so much. Okay.
Not really.
So kind of different.
Different. Yeah, there's in the animal protection world, I mean, that really could be a topic for an entire show on its own.
Got it.
Because
just quickly take us through this. You know, I did the ivory bill for Tony Atkins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I worked with Jennifer on that.
Yeah. There are people who are truly dedicated to helping animals. There are others who are in it to raise money. And what they'll typically do is pass something meaningless.
An ivory ban.
And then, I'm not sure about that. I'm not going to speak to that. But they'll pass something that's meaningless, and then the organization will go out and raise money.
Right,
people
around
who,
it.
Yeah. And in fact, on the horse slaughter initiative that I was involved with, there were a couple of organizations that were actually pretty well known. I mean, you'd know their names. And we reached out to them for money for the campaign. Mm-hmm. And they turned us down.
Yeah.
And then after we won, they sent out fundraising solicitations saying we helped with Prop 6. Now we need money.
You know, every enclave has its own politics.
Mm-hmm.
Every enclave has its own politics. I remember I had an intern the Sacramento semester program.
Oh, who'd you intern with?
Kyle Packham over at Special Districts.
Oh, okay.
One of the interns in the cohort was a cancer survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And they had said, like, you know, I'm not particularly fond of St. Jude's.
Mm-hmm.
And their thing was, at least from their perception, I'm not trying to, you know, no accusation, but the perception from this one person was that St. Jude's only takes the kids that have a likelihood of making it to pad their statistics.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that.
Yeah, but they're not going to take that determining
the hopeless case.
Yeah, because that's like a demerit on them.
Yeah,
you know, if you were going to make it anyways.
Yeah.
Again, this is just what this one person who survived cancer and has probably very hard feelings on the topic. This is just their story, right? But I mean, it's just like, wow, I never would have thought of that, right? If I'm just looking at it from the outside, you know, it's not until you like really peel the onions, so you start seeing some of the stinky layers, right?
Humane Society of the United States has an $11 million building in Washington, D.C.
What are you doing with an $11 million building?
Well, in that building, no animals are allowed.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I'm starting to understand some of the source of why you and Jennifer don't work together. Because you actually want to help the animals. That's so funny. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like, you know, encapsulated in this issue is a broader topic about the monetization of outrage in politics.
Very good point. Yes.
Right. Because, the example that I always use is around this issue is fracking.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And really what's going on is that the substance of the matter no longer matters. When you have these 501, when you have these like nonprofit organizations that are really in the fundraising business,
exactly right.
They're in the outrage business.
Yes.
Right. So when Fran Pavley came up with like SB4 to regulate fracking, it's the most comprehensive fracking bill that ever been done. And I mean, the governor at the time, Governor Brown, was making some very clear you know, he put some very clear markers out and says, hey, fracking's here to stay in California.
Mm-hmm.
No ifs, ands, or buts. Fracking's here to stay. So Fran Pavley is the environmental leader that she is. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, if it's here to stay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to regulate it, right? Mm-hmm. And for the first time in their history, the Sierra Club opposed a Fran Pavley bill.
Mm-hmm.
And it had nothing to do with the, but if you were to hold
but it had to do with their business plan.
It had to do with their business plan, right? It had to do with the fact that they're in the selling t-shirts business.
Mm-hmm.
It had to do with the fact that they have to have like a crisis to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, not, no conspiracy theory, but this is actual. I mean, from two people that actually know how this business works, there has to be something to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So
not a problem to solve.
Yeah.
Because that gets into in the way of what you're trying to sell.
Right.
You know, so that's a piece. Do you know that Fran Pavley is the great granddaughter of William Jennings Bryan?
No.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Fran, you got to come. Is she still around?
Oh, sure. Well, yeah. 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 No. And I knew that. And so whenever she would have a bill that I was testifying on that, you know, I would reference William Jennings Bryan in one way or
she'd another. She'd kind of smile.
Oh, yeah. You have to have fun with this stuff. You know?
Yeah.
Or when she was, there was one bill dealing with banks. And I remember she was saying some really good things about these particular banks. And I said, Fran, your great-grandfather would not approve.
Yeah, so there's this here's roughly the playbook is you take an issue, you piss people off,
mm-hmm.
and you fundraise around it.
Yep.
And then what actually happens to the issue doesn't matter.
No.
Yeah. You're laughing all the way to the bank, right?
Yeah. Well, you really see that in the animal area because as Merritt Clifton, who's a journalist in the area,
Do you still have clients in this area?
Some. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Not
active, no, so just right? talking. No.
I don't know. But people I know and I'm close to.
Sure.
And if they asked me to come in, I would.
Of course. I'm just trying to lay out where the markers are.
But Merritt Clifton puts out a journal called Animal People, and it's almost like a consumer guide to who's real and who isn't real in the animal protection world.
Yeah.
But he once said to me, he said, John, this is the easiest scam to pull because if I have a nonprofit where I'm helping disabled children or veterans, at some point or another, someone's going to come forward and say, well, what are you really doing for this class?
Right. But the animals can't say anything.
Animals can't speak. Exactly. Yeah. So it's a pretty easy con, you know.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised at the names that are household names that are in it to raise money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, if we're going to be, you know, I guess totally cynical about this is that really this is just a revenue generation system, mm-hmm. right? This is mm-hmm. just a revenue generation system.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your, and there's like in the animal protection kingdom, like it's so funny. And Jennifer was explaining this to me. She was like, yeah, you know, I think she represents the Humane Society.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, yeah, but you know, we have like, there's like the spectrum. Like she was like, you know, we're the reasonable ones. We're like, there's some other people out there that are like totally mm-hmm. militant, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's interesting just kind of discussing this kind of political spectrum. Maybe this isn't exactly what we plan to talk about, but this is, super interesting.
Sure.
The folks that you have worked for, and I think a lot of the folks in the animal protection world, hunting, conservation,
mm-hmm.
that's really that's more about resource management. But mm-hmm. Kind of where are they in that spectrum? Like where
The people who
and
I
your clients now,
The clients I have had because I don't have any current ones.
Okay.
But the clients I've had are very anti-hunting.
Got it.
You know, and they
got it.
That's just not an option.
Got it.
And I know some of them on a personal basis who have been to someone's home or had a blind date and the person turned out to be a hunter.
And I was just like,
that
thanks.
Was the end of the relationship.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and how are they funded? Conviction or what?
With some of them, they're self-funded.
Got
there
it.
Are some who are very, very wealthy. You may remember there was a woman at the Capitol who was one of the partners in the Oakland Raiders. Actually, was one of the people whose vote helped Al Davis become the managing partner of the Raiders. Gladys, and I've just drawn a blank on her last
name. That's okay.
Yeah, but so there's some people like that.
Okay.
Then there's others who set up nonprofits. And it's a constituency where you can raise money. I mean, you can really, you pull on people's emotions,
mm-hmm.
you know, to respond. And then the big unknown is, are you going to be using those resources in to advance your cause, or are you essentially going to be using those resources as a personal income stream?
Your clients now, you were working, do I hear right around that you work on some gaming issues?
Yes, I'm kind of a rookie on that. But okay. I represent Players Poker Club in Ventura.
Okay.
And it's a fascinating area. And one of the things that I was able to do as a lobbyist when I first came in was because my other clients in the past have all been law enforcement and police chiefs.
You kind of give a fresh set of eyes, probably.
Well, and yes, because I looked at it and I said, wait a minute. You know, these card clubs are all in cities, yet they have to go through all kinds of hoops to determine how they can operate. I mean, you couldn't even, when I first came on, card clubs couldn't even determine their own hours of operation. A city had no control over the hours of operation of a card room.
Almost like the Gambling Control Bureau?
Yes, yeah, which is just worthless.
Yeah.
And so what I did was I brought in the League of Cities, the police chiefs. Built a coalition that was a different coalition.
Right.
Because typically what you have in this area, at least from my limited experience,
the casinos and the tribes.
You've got the tribes on one side and the card rooms on the other. And policymakers viewed the whole thing as a binary choice between the two.
Yeah.
But suddenly you had the League of Cities and the police chiefs in support of a bill that gave cities the exclusive authority to determine the hours of operation of a card room.
Local control makes all the sense in the world.
Local control.
Yeah. And do they get a, is there like a fee that the card rooms are paying to the cities now?
Or well, the card rooms pay taxes to the cities and they generate good revenue. They're an important revenue stream for cities.
Yeah.
And what the cities did when we brought them into the coalition is they said, hey, wait a minute, we've lost redevelopment money. You know, this is an important revenue stream for us. If they can operate 24/7, we should be able to determine that because that's important for us. And frankly, some remote state agency has no stake in that issue. This is an issue of local control, local operation. That bill passed the legislature.
Yeah, you know, that makes all the sense in the world. Haley and I were at Pismo Beach. You know, a couple, you know, and I could see a card room maybe, or I'm not saying that there is one, but I could see a card room around there. Like, they have like a tourism industry there, right?
Oh, sure.
Like, why wouldn't a card room be able to stay open with hours commensurate to whenever the night
light? They're doing.
To what they're doing. You know what I mean? The idea that somebody somewhere.
Somebody in some, yeah, in a small
some bureaucrat,
office in Sacramento.
Some weenie bureaucrat is going to tell you when, you know.
Yeah, who has
like, are we not a free society?
Right.
Right.
You know, who has a tribal advocate tugging on his or her sleeve.
Oh, there's that whole thing too, right?
Yeah.
That's so weird. Can you explain, just for folks listening, just kind of civic engagement here. We take a step back. Can you explain this sort of tribes versus card rooms thing?
It's fascinating, actually.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, what happened is once the tribes passed Proposition 1A and got their casino gaming
license throughout the state.
Right. In addition to building those facilities, they've also taken a predatory attitude toward the card rooms. And it's
let me stop you right there. Is the view, this is a zero-sum game, there's just a gambling market out there, and we would like people to come into our big casinos and not into the card rooms to gamble. Is that kind of the view of it?
It may be the view, but it's not a realistic, credible view. I mean, if I'm going to a card room here in Sacramento, just a little card room playing
the Limelight here over on.
Yeah, I'm going to the Limelight, and I'm thinking, well, gee, I live a block from the Limelight, and it's fun to play cards. I'm really not going to get into my car and drive up to Lincoln to go to Thunder Valley. I mean, it's just
two separate offerings.
They're two separate offerings, precisely. Yeah. That's well put.
Yeah, I mean, I don't frequent either. I can tell you, I don't frequent either.
I'm the worst card player.
No, dude, I can't do the math. Yeah. Oh, I can't do the math. I get emotional. Mm-hmm. The last thing I need is another vice.
Yeah.
The last thing I need is another vice, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a good. But you know what? The last time that I went to Thunder Valley was like, I think like Tony Atkins had a staff retreat there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then that maybe years ago I went to like a pool party mm-hmm. with a couple of buddies, mm-hmm. but that was, you know,
I've gone there to eat. Their buffet yeah. is pretty good.
And I think about like, I don't know what got, actually, I know what it was. Tommy Bahama is like targeting their ads to me, and they've got mm-hmm. this like Vegas themed shirt. And I was like, man, I'd like to wear that in Vegas. Mm-hmm. So I said to Haley, we got to go to Vegas. Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, when? We'll put it on the calendar, you know? But that's the only time I can think of myself like cruising into a casino. And I got to tell yeah. you, when we go to Vegas, it's going to be, I like the margarita slushies by the pool. We're going to catch a right, show. Right. We're going to stay out late. We're going to cruise the strip.
Go to one of their upscale
yeah,
restaurants.
Yeah, but yeah. there's not, like, you're not going to convince me to gamble. I'm not oh, a yeah. gambler. Like, right. I kind of see that as a binary. Like, you know, mm-hmm. like, I'm not a gambler. Like, there's people that are gamblers. Mm-hmm. One of the Muay Thai coaches at Alpha Male, one of the okay. Thai boxers, uh-huh. this guy would, I mean, he was just the craziest. He was just the craziest gambler. We'll wrap up in a few minutes here. He was just one of the craziest gamblers, but he would come in with these like, man, he came in one time with like this giant rooster. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you like? I won this rooster. And then like, and then, you know, 2 weeks later, he'd be like down on his luck, like asking everyone for, you know, sure. after yeah. one of his fighters won the championship and he had like a $100,000 stake in that whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, 2 weeks later, he'd like come in with like yeah. a Lexus, and then it'd be yeah. gone a month later. Yeah. There's a bus stop right in front of the mm-hmm. street, you know? Mm-hmm. And he was like, hey, I'll bet you a woman gets off that bus first. I was like, no, Master Tong. No, I don't like, oh, that's a gambler. Right. But you know, I mean, for me, like with the tribes versus the card rooms, it's like, you know, you're not going to get me to like persuade me to,
right.
to get, you know, it's just,
yeah, no, it's not, it, you know.
You're either going to do
well,
it.
Well, I actually had one experience with yeah. gambling on sports. I'm a big boxing fan.
Yeah. Give us 2 minutes, guys.
Years ago, I was at the Olympic Auditorium in Los Angeles
yeah.
to see Emil Griffith, four-time world champion,
yeah.
Fight Ernie Indian Red Lopez, Danny Lopez's yeah. big brother. And there were these guys sitting behind me, and they said, all right, you know, what about, we want to bet on the fight. We want Lopez, you know.
Yeah.
And what about putting a half on the fight? All right. So I said, yeah. Okay. Well, I watched the fight, and it was one of the best boxing matches I've ever seen. Both fighters brought their best.
Yeah.
Both adjusted to the changes in the strategy yeah, of yeah. the other.
It was a dialogue. It was an ongoing dialogue.
Yes, yes. It was a physical conversation. It yeah. was terrific, but I didn't enjoy it a bit. Yeah. Why? Because I had money on the fight. Okay. At the end, well, here's the rest of that story. At the end of that fight, Griffith won a skin-tight decision, but there was no dispute over
yeah.
it. So I turned to the guy behind me, and I said,
all right, guys.
And at first he tried to get out of the bet. Then his friend said, no, you got to pay. Well, I'm thinking, okay, so I'm going to get 50 cents, a half, you know? No, I get $500.
Oh, wow.
I had seven bucks to my name. If that fight had gone the other way, I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah. Hey, we got Randy Vopel on deck, right? So we should maybe leave it
you
there.
You want to just do it another time?
No, okay. I think this is actually a good conversation. Yeah, no, the animal stuff is super interesting.
Yeah.
Let's do a part two.
All right, sure.
Okay, let's do a part two in a couple months.
Yeah, yeah, maybe I'll name names of the yeah. organizations.
All right, John Lovell. Hey, are you, this is going to, I would like to put it out, this is going to go out.
Yeah.
The animal stuff is super interesting, and I think maybe after this goes out, maybe we'll get some viewer questions
sure.
on the yeah. card rooms and the casino yeah, stuff, sure. and maybe some public safety stuff yeah. too. Where can folks, if someone's looking for a lobbyist, or where can folks keep up with you? Do you have a website, online? How do folks get a hold of
it? Actually, I'm rebuilding my website now.
Okay.
And I'm actually talking to Jarrett about being part of his website.
Oh, got it. Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. John Lovell, California lobbyist. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks. No, I enjoyed this, man. Yeah. It was fun.
It's not bad, huh?
Yeah. All right. Our old dreamers.